My like great fear as a boy, as it still is today, is like getting caught. You know what that's like. You never want to get caught, really, doing anything. Or maybe similar is like the idea of like just getting called out for something that I did do or something that I didn't do. Especially when in the moment I knew like I was capable of more. I knew what should have been done. And it's like mom asked me to take the trash out, and it's like I didn't take the trash out, and then I get asked about it, or unload the dishwasher, and I didn't do it, or do your homework, or you get caught in the middle of a lie. Like there's a real fear that you have to sort of live with in the midst of all of that. Like there's a million things that we could talk about, but knowing that I didn't do the excellent thing, and then having to live with that, and then being fearful to sort of not only just disappoint myself, but let that be on display for somebody else. They now know like what I'm capable of, which is not my best. It's like it's a very human experience. There's a real sort of crushing feeling when somebody else notices your flaws. I should want to be excellent. I should want to be good for myself, but so often I can be motivated by the people around me. And we get something of this in today's gospel when after Jesus has just presented his disciples with what's going to happen to the Son of Man, that he's going to be handed over, they will kill him, and at 3 days after his death, the Son of Man will rise. And Jesus knows what the disciples are arguing about on the way, and he, with some embarrassment on their lips, they remain silent. Jesus doesn't have to lecture them at length about what he sees in them or what they're missing out on. As soon as he begs the question, they see the silliness, the folly of what they were doing. It says that they were arguing about who among them was the greatest. They were arguing after Jesus has performed so many miracles and taught. Like they pale in comparison to him, and yet there's still some prideful element in them, like there is in all of us, like wanting to be the greatest. And maybe you don't go around saying, I'm the best or I'm the greatest. In us, it comes out in different ways. We think to ourselves, well, I had a way better idea than he did. This wouldn't be a total failure if they had gone with my idea. Or we think that I could have done a better job than she is, or I'm doing more than he is. And we sort of compare ourselves, get caught up in this sort of comparison game or jealousy game even. And there's that prideful element, once again, that always sort of takes over for us. But in this moment with the apostles, Jesus, all he has to do is pose a really simple and gentle question. What were you arguing about on the way? And we hear that they remain silent. This is a moment of what we call actual grace. This is a moment of actual grace where God is with us at all times in our life. There's no doubt about it. He is certainly present at all times in our life. But these moments of actual grace is where on the timeline of your life, God chooses to intervene here and now in a specific time in a specific place. God intervenes so that we can be brought back into communion with him, or that we can be brought further into communion with him. It probably happens more often than you think it does. It's not like there's this great manifestation, the skies open up. It's the Lord prompting us, bidding us, calling us to draw closer to him. This happens a lot in your life, that we would be in communion with him. So I wouldn't just do everything or this thing my way, that I actually try and seek what the Lord's doing. So that in the midst of it, I can do the excellent thing. I can sort of live up, act according to the standard I set for myself, or maybe even the standard that others are setting for me. So often what this sounds like is, we can think of those moments where our conscience sort of kicks in and intervenes. St. John Henry Newman, I don't talk to him enough about you, to you all enough about him. John Henry Newman's our patron. We should know him and love him. John Henry Newman called the conscience, and we're all like really scared of that word. Like, we shouldn't be scared of that word. Our conscience is not like the fun killer in your life, or worse, the idea of like Catholic guilt. I don't like that phrase, Catholic guilt, at all. Like, your conscience is your friend. St. John Henry Newman calls the conscience the aboriginal vicar of Christ. Big words, I know, stick with me. Aboriginal, from the beginning. It was planted in Adam and Eve from the very beginning. The aboriginal, but from the beginning, the vicar, the representative of Christ. That even Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel and all of their descendants, you and I, children, sons and daughters of Adam and Eve, have this gift in us, this representative of Christ, Jesus speaking to us, so that we can be brought into communion with him, so that we don't get caught up in the external things all around us. That this moment of grace that happens of me is the voice of Jesus calling me higher. That this is the voice of Jesus calling me to follow him. This is the voice of Jesus trying to keep the evil things away, to save me from the miseries that this life has. This is the voice of Jesus calling me to be excellent in the ways that I know that I can be, to be a person faithful in prayer, to be a person who doesn't need to disclose gossip, to be a person who's able to tell the truth and to own it, to be the sort of friend that's there for others, to be the student who does their work on time, to be the sort of person who doesn't procrastinate everything, like that I can show up each day and do the excellent thing. And the Lord, in moments of grace, intervenes to show us the way if we're willing to follow him. You all are still young enough that your conscience is alive and well, which is a gift, that the Lord wants to be close to you. But over time, we can train our conscience to basically just click off. It's like if we say no, if we don't respond enough, that voice sort of disappears. And that's sort of a tragic road, that if I no longer obey the Lord, it's not that he's not intervening, but my voice or my ear isn't trained to hear. So often in Jesus' parables, he says, whoever has ears ought to hear. And you think that's kind of crazy. Like, pretty much everybody has ears. But it's like the ears of your heart aren't going to be attuned to the voice of the Lord. And I'm not going to see it or feel it or know it when he prompts. Those of you who are going to be called to be fathers and husbands and mothers and wives, whatever vocation that the Lord is calling you to, it's way bigger than just you. It's way bigger than you just being the greatest here on earth, comparing yourself to the person beside you. That your vocation in life is meant to bless others. And that means that the Lord wants to use the gifts that he's implanted in you, the gifts that he's given to you, to be a voice for him here on earth. And the question that remains in us is whether or not we're willing to embrace the voice of Jesus, these moments of grace. St. James has a word of caution for us in his letter. He says, where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder in every foul practice. Where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder. Our life is out of order. Our priorities aren't right. We're not spending time in the right things. We're not giving our energy to the right people. We're sort of living maybe even a hypocritical life, sort of duplicitous life, that we're one person one way and another person another way. There's this disorder that we find within ourselves. And then every foul practice. But he says this, but the wisdom from above, the wisdom that is the voice of Jesus, is first of all pure, then peaceable, gentle, compliant, full of mercy and good fruits, without inconstancy or insincerity. As young people, we're so prone to inconstancy, especially in our life of faith. I'm inconstant. In the Old Testament, God's love is described as steadfast. And every time I read that, it sticks with me. Steadfast. That he abides even when we're unfaithful. That the Lord is faithful even when we turn against him. That he remains with us even when we go against him. that he is constant in the face of all things. And if my love is to mirror his at all, I have to be constant as a person of faith, that I can't work in fits and starts, especially when it comes to living what I would call a virtuous and excellent life, to live to the standard that you set for yourself and not the lowly standard that the world sets for you. Jesus asks a really gentle and simple question to his disciples. What were you arguing about on the way? It's the desire of my heart to be constant in my pursuit of the Lord, and he gives us his voice to guide us along that way, to do the excellent thing and to promptly respond to the call of Jesus. Let's be attentive to his voice, and we hear it, to respond promptly, to give our lives over to him each day.